Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, where every week at this time you hear two stories of people that have overcome all sorts of insurmountable odds in their life, but the good news is they've come out on the other side. I'm Denise McEntee, your host today, and we have with us a woman who, wow, wrote an incredible book about her experience, and she's going to share it with us coming up. Her name is B.A. Austin, and the book, and I urge you to get the book, it's an unbelievable read, is called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. And for those of you who enjoy these stories, her story is incredible. So, B.A., welcome to Steppin' Out Radio.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
No, we're really, you know, your book is incredible. And
thank you.
We begin at the beginning on Steppin' Out Radio. So if you could just bring us back to the beginning in your life, what your life was like growing up.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, in the 60s, and I grew up at the time of when society was highly segregated, and was especially in the, particularly in the South, and it was very rampant in Memphis. And it was during the time of a lot of civil rights movements. I lived through the death of Martin Luther King, which did happen in Memphis. And I was raised by the most amazing African-American woman from the time I was five until I went off to college. And I experienced so much unconditional love from her, and which is something I definitely needed growing up. And I grew up in a privileged household. The girls that I grew up with all had African American nannies that were really a huge part of the family, and she was my best friend. And you know, we have the 60s with today's TV with Mad Men and the shows like that. It was a time where drinking and just cocktails at lunch and drinking at night, coming home, parents coming home or father coming home after work, and the first thing they do is get their drink. And I grew up in that type of family. My father was an amazing man. He truly was. But I never saw him. He was in his business. He was gone 24/7. But alcohol was a big part of his daily routine. Mm-hmm. And I come from a family, generations on both sides of my family, mother and father, of alcoholics. And it goes back beyond my grandfather.
And what was your mother's like? She just drank when your dad came home, or
she at that time growing up, my mother was not a drinker. She may have a beer, mm-hmm. but it was not until later in her life that starting in her 40s and into her 50s, where she turned to alcohol and it became a big addiction for her. Mm-hmm. My father, I would call him a functioning alcoholic. I never saw him in a drunken state. My mother, unfortunately, alcohol really took over her life, and it's really what led to her early passing.
And do you have siblings, B.A.? Do you have siblings, brothers, sisters?
Do I? I have two brothers.
Oh, okay.
My dad came from a family of four, and three of them, my father lived the longest, three of them died in their 40s and 50s, all of alcohol-related diseases.
Wow.
My grandfather on my dad's side died at 52 from alcohol, and it was at that time my father was in college, or just gotten out of college, and my dad took over his business. Between my dad and his siblings, there were 14 of us, so we 14 cousins. Out of the 14, only three did not have alcohol issues. I have two cousins who have already died. I'm 62. One had an OD'd in his early 30s. The other one passed in his 50s from alcohol. I have a cousin who is addicted to meth and has been practically her whole life. I have several cousins who are still out there. I don't know where they are, but they're still deep in their addiction. And then there's those like myself. I have a cousin who did seek help and went to rehab like I did and is sober today. So it is rampant.
No,
and on my mother's side, my mother was a single, was the only child. And my grandfather, her dad, who I just adored, he was a postmaster up in a tiny country town in Tennessee. And he was very addicted. He once he had one beer, I have memories as a child, he'd come down to visit, and if he had one beer, then he had cases of a beer. I would find it under his bed, and my mother never let me go visit him by myself. Mm-hmm. My brothers have memories of visiting him, and he would go into a bar, leave them in the car, believe it or not, and come out hours later drunk.
Mm. Yeah. So
and later in life, I called him Papa, and later in life, he gave it up. You know, he was divorced from my grandmother, for years and years. And this woman who he married later in his life sobered him up. He never took another drink. Now, my grandmother on my mom's side also was an alcoholic. And that kind of happened later in her life, too, I would say, that I noticed as an adult. She got so bad. I could never take my children over to visit her when they were little. I would walk in the middle of the day sometimes to her apartment, and she would have black eyes, blood all over her from falling.
Oh, so sad, right?
So it was, needless to say, alcohol is rampant in my family.
But back to you. So you had an upbringing, so you saw this around you, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
How did then your life go on? So you know, your early years, your grammar school years, your middle school, like how did it take us on what your life was like?
I would say I lived a very privileged life growing up. But drinking was definitely a part that I saw all the time, and including Sundays going to my grandmother's, and everybody pull out their flask or whatever, because my grandmother, on my dad's side, did not drink. But growing up, for me, looking back, I was filled with anxiety. I didn't know what it was at the time, but my mother had me at doctors all the time because I always was nauseated. I always had this anxious feeling in my stomach, and no one ever saw what it was or found it. And then when I went off to college, I drank no differently than others. You know, we would party on the weekends, that type of thing. So I didn't think of it being a problem at that time. But my anxiety issues really did continue on, and I would break out in hives and not really knowing what it was.
Did you ever pinpoint what you were anxious about, or it was just like a generalized anxiety?
It was general anxiety, mm-hmm. and I left the South and went up to New England for college, and so I was far away from home, and at the time when I was in college, my parents moved out to California to retire, an early retirement, and they were still, I guess, in their early 50s, but and then I noticed when out of college, I always battled my weight as a child. Like at the age of 10, I was on the heavy side. And even at 10 years old, the doctors had me on a diet. Backing up a little bit, sure, I do know why I was anxious. My father expected perfection in regards to academics for my brothers and for me. My mother, being Southern and the Southern Belle and all that, and she was a very beautiful woman, expected me to look perfect.
And we're going to find out if you did look perfect, which I'm sure, I see your picture, you're beautiful. But we're going to find out more of what happened to BA as her life went on. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio, two stories of people that have overcome adversity in their lives, and BA certainly is one of those incredible people. And if you'd like to hear more stories of like BA's, go to our website at steppinoutradio.com. And I just also want to give the name of the book that BA wrote called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. We'll be right back.
More true stories of real people who clawed their way back from addiction are just a tap away with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app, available for iOS and Android devices. Go to steppinoutradio.com on your phone or tablet now and click the banner icon. Find that favorite episode, share it through email, or post it on Facebook and Twitter. Steppinoutradio.com has one-touch subscriptions for iTunes, Google Play, and all other popular podcasting apps. Find it at steppinoutradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host, and we have with us an incredible speaker who's sharing with us her experience, strength, and hope in how she overcame a life riddled with people that had alcoholism. And if you just joined us, basically so many people in her family died young of it, but obviously she's still with us, so she was able to overcome, you know, the various issues that made her abuse substances. And she's the author of an awesome book, and I urge you to go get a pen and write it down. It's riveting, just like her story. It's called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. You can get it, I'm sure, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever they sell books. But it's an awesome read for anybody interested in a fascinating story and her life and how she overcame, you know, all the traumas that a lot of us experienced. And last we left, you were telling us that you had to be perfect in academics because your dad was, that was the expectation from your dad, and you had to be perfect in the way you looked because that was sort of, you know, like you said, your mom was beautiful and she wanted you to be the same, and that was maybe, you know, hey, it still goes on today, so I can't even say it's just in the South. But so what happened? So that caused you anxiety. Now you're away at college. You were always on a diet, or people put you
right
on a diet.
Always on a diet. And just what you said, this is so true with so many young women, and my heart breaks for them, and I hope they hear this story. And I battled it, and when I went off to college, like so many girls, I put on the what they call the freshman 15. The 15 pounds caught my first year, and my mother was just so devastated over that shipped me off to a fat farm. I
wow.
came home for that summer to lose that weight, or what you would call a health spa, but I guess in those days they called it a fat farm.
Now, did you want to go? Were you like, yeah, mom,
no.
I need to lose this? Oh, wow. So you didn't even want to go.
No, okay. I was forced. I was put on a plane and sent to California
okay.
from Memphis.
Okay.
They were still living in Memphis. And I at that time really battled in my self-image. And I was always been one of those girls who would look in the mirror and see something differently than what I really looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably still carry that to a degree today. So I went there, and I still kind of went up and down in college. But it's always a self-image. I always had that self-image issue, whether my academically or my looks. And then when I got out of college and I got married too quickly, but I did, and I became an obsession with running. This would be in the late 70s, and I would run probably 10 miles a day just because of, okay, I got to burn the calories. But then I'd come in and binge eat. So it was the binging thing. I never had the throwing up thing. I hate to be so graphic, but I know a lot of girls that have had that problem. They
mm-hmm.
binge eat and then go.
Right. They take laxatives.
Themselves.
They do lots of different, right.
Do a lot of different ways. So I was really into that habit for all through my 20s. And even when I had my son and daughter, I was doing that. I'd go off and run early in the morning before my husband, who is now an ex-husband, but at the time, before he'd go to work. And I remember thinking to myself, I will never, ever put this onto my children, you know, anything about their weight, their academics. I just wanted it so differently for them. And then by that time I hit my 30s, I would say the binge eating and the obsession of exercise waned. But what took place was my husband at the time, we were social drinkers, but I really realized at that time that every time, I didn't drink every night, but every time I drank too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may not have acted drunk, but I always knew I drank too much. And then at age 36, my children are still young, and I ended up, my husband and I, my mother passed away.
Mm-hmm.
She was 62, and I spent, you know, days and days with her during her passing when she was getting weaker and weaker. And I know the alcohol certainly contributed to that, because at that point, my mother was drinking from morning to night.
Wow.
And not eating.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother, her mother, who was still alive, was in a nursing home by then, but she is the one I was saying that drank from morning to night as well. And my mom passed away, and I think just being distraught over that, and as well as maybe other reasons, my husband and I ended up separating, and then we ultimately got a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And
had you had a good marriage up till then, or not really?
It was okay. We were friends. I wouldn't say it was a good marriage.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think we just played roles.
Okay.
We played roles.
Right.
And I think we were both looking back on it, and we certainly get along well now. He's remarried, and which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we were just very immature at the time.
You were young, right?
And didn't deal with it right. Where if we had been more mature, we would have, and maybe it would have worked, but at the time it didn't. And so my mother passed away. I went through the separation, and we were divorced in 93. And I noticed from the time of 90, when my mother died, to 97, so we're talking 7 years, my one glass of wine at night went to two, went to three. And before I knew it, I would go through a whole bottle a night,
mm-hmm.
if not more, maybe even two bottles.
Now, at this time, were you working at all? Did you have to get up to go to work, or?
No, I was part-time,
mm-hmm.
yes. And I would get up, and I would live, no one would know that I had this problem. I mean, I'd get up and live a normal life and be a mom to my children, and I was working in the museum field, and
So you didn't suffer incredible hangovers where you were like, oh, a lot of women tell their stories.
I did suffer incredible hangovers, but I'd go on about my day.
But you barreled through, right.
So, and then I was a closet drinker, and I would do it at night, mainly after my kids would be off to bed. And as my daughter and son got older, they started to, especially my daughter, she started to really see it, and she was really worried about me. And I was worried about me. Here I was drinking every single night, waking up with horrible hangovers, trying to go live my life, be a good mom. Be just a good person and pretend. I was trying to pretend because I was so embarrassed.
Right.
I wouldn't go to anybody to ask for help. So,
did you ever try to stop?
I did try to stop, and I couldn't.
Okay, so that was...
And it's without a doubt a physical addiction for me. And I tried to stop. I think it was in 95. I went to an outpatient rehab. And I went to AA and did that for a while, and I was in denial, and I went back and drank again every night. And then in 97, my daughter, who was just so loving and so wise and was so worried about me, so she was about 16 at this point, and she went to one of my brothers and said, I'm really worried about mom.
And we're going to find out. We're going to find out, BA, what happened. And thank God for your daughter. You're right. She's one of the angels that we talk about a lot on this show. You're
absolutely
listening to BA Austin's story. And BA Austin wrote a book called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. You can hear more stories like BA's on our website at steppingoutradio.com. I'm Denise McIntyre, your host, and we'll be back with more of BA's stories up next. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio.
Aren't these stories of addiction and recovery inspiring? Wish you could share them instantly with friends or even relatives? You can with Steppin' Out Radio's new mobile app. It's available for iOS and Android phones and tablets. Share that episode in an email, Facebook post, or tweet with a single tap on your screen. Download shows to your devices and listen while working, jogging, or lounging. Prefer a podcast? Steppin' Out Radio is on Google Play, iTunes, and many other podcast platforms. Go to steppinoutradio.com to subscribe.
Welcome back. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio, where you hear two stories of people that have overcome all sorts of adversity in their lives. But the good news is they come out on the other side and are here to share with you what worked for them in their quest to heal and get help. And there's hope because if you're listening to B.A. Austin's story, you're going to find out, you know, how her life turned around. She's the author also of an awesome book that I urge you to get called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. So, B.A., last you left, your daughter was, you know, went to your brother and said, I'm worried about Mom. I think she needs help.
Yes. So one, this was in the spring of 97 and April, actually, and my brother, actually it was my sister-in-law, called me and said, oh, we're going to have a little get-together, a barbecue. You want to come over? And I said, great. So I walk into the house, and I just something in me thought, something's up here. Something's up. Because I saw these cars in the parking lot, and I thought, who else hit this thing? And so anyway, I walk in, and my oldest brother put his arm around me and took me into the den, and there was my family, my kids, and my other brother, and there was a pastor there, and I thought, okay, this is an intervention. So I was luckily, you know what? What can I say, Denise? I was so grateful. I mean, I've met so many people who are so angry when they've been intervened on. I was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I just cried, and I just said, thank you. Aww. And the pastor there was a recovering alcoholic. He was a mediator, and he was a recovering alcoholic. And they went around and read letters to me. And then they said, the pastor said, we have a spot for you over at the Betty Ford Center. You can go or choose not to go, something like that. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm going.
Wow.
And I went home, packed my bag, and my brother drove me over. And that was, and I was still so blessed because I wanted it so much, and I was crying out inside of me, and I didn't know how to. I was embarrassed to go to anybody, and I was so blessed and grateful that they did this intervention.
Right, and here your daughter is so young, but yet, wow.
Yes,
know.
Brooke was, you know, she was 16, and my son was 12. You know, and they were there with, and my family had love. They were there with love, my, you know, not condemning me whatsoever.
Right.
Just they're full of love, and especially my children. And so I went, and so that's why I felt so grateful. And I went for 30 days and to the Betty Ford Center, and I did everything they told me to do. And, you know, you walk in there, and you have to get a physical. The nurse, that's the first thing you do, and then the psychiatrist gives you a test. And the psychiatrist told me that it was a physical addiction, and which of course was rampant in my family. And I just went through the 30 days and did it, and went through all the meetings. You have group meetings, you have individual sessions, you're giving all these responsibilities. And for, you know, from 6 in the morning to night, late at night, you had things you had to do. So
now, did they address your anxiety? Like, did the psychiatrist, you know, because you said your whole life you suffered from this generalized anxiety.
Oh, absolutely.
Anxiety.
They addressed the anxiety, and the psychiatrist and the therapist certainly worked with me on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean I walked out with no anxiety.
Right, of course.
That's life.
Right.
You know, people get anxiety and some react differently than others. Now, it used to be I would go drink or the other things that I told you about that I did growing up. So they give you tools to learn how to deal with that,
mm-hmm.
the anxiety. And that's what, you know, we need. We need tools. And when I got out, they recommend each individual what they think they should do. And for me, they were saying I need to go to 3 AA meetings a day for I don't know how many months, and which I did, and I needed to see if they signed me to a therapist and here out in San Diego to see a few days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, I stuck with the program that they told me to stick with to do, and over time, you know, the therapy I was able to cut back on that and cut back on the AA, not go to 3 times a day, and here we are now, almost 20 years later, and I haven't had another drink, and I don't praise myself for that. It's just it truly is by God's grace and Him giving me the courage to do the work, and when people say it's one day at a time, it's really true, and there is help out there for anyone. And I mean, I could fall just like the next person if I didn't stick with what I'm doing to keep myself sober.
So how old were you when you got sober, by the way? How old were you?
I was 43.
Okay. So, yeah, you were relatively young.
Yeah. So between 36 when my mother passed and 43, those are the 7 years that it really got bad.
Right.
Slowly. And that's the thing about alcohol, or it's just so insidious. I mean, it just creeps up on you and boom, you don't realize it's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, here you are, a full-blown alcoholic.
But you were in denial, but yet you knew. So.
Oh, I knew.
Yeah.
I knew.
Some people say they really didn't, you know, think they had a problem. You know, they really.
Yeah. I those last 7 years, particularly, I really knew. Before that, when I would drink socially, and then I'd wake up thinking, gee, I drank too much last night. I thought, well, I shouldn't have done that. But every time, I always drank too much.
Right.
Every time.
Right. It was never like you would have, you know, maybe one or two. You
no.
always over, yeah.
Right. I never. It was always too much. So I'm just
now
grateful
what,
that, I'm sorry, yes?
Yeah, no, but what I was going to say is, you have a lot of this support, and to go to 3 meetings a day, I've never even heard of that. So, but you did it, which is awesome, you know. So my question is, though, was it hard? You know, how hard was it? Or did you just take it, like you said, one day at a time and not look too far into it?
I didn't look too far into it.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. I think at the time I was so determined to never drink again that it was just part of my day.
Right.
It was just part of my life. And I and sir, there were many meetings I thought, oh, I don't know why I'm here. I'm not getting anything out of this. And so anyone will tell you that goes to meetings. Sometimes you walk out going, oh, I feel worse than when I walked in. So it's not like it was roses. It was
right, and what
journey.
We hear, though, from other people, if you don't, and this is important, I think, for people, if you don't like a meeting and it's not clicking, go to another meeting.
Well, absolutely.
We've had people come on and say, you know, they went to AA meeting, they didn't like it, and walked out and never went again. And boy, if they had only tried maybe a couple of meetings, because then when they went again to try to get sober and went to a different meeting, it made all the difference.
Absolutely. There are so many meetings out there. And it's in the area where I live in San Diego, there is a meeting morning, noon, and night. They're everywhere.
Right.
everywhere.
So don't.
So you
that's
can always
the key.
Go to
don't
a
give
different
up.
Meeting.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you want to hear more stories like BA's, you can go to our website for all sorts of success stories, and that's steppingoutradio.com. And BA also wrote a book called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. And her name is BA Austin, A-U-S-T-I-N. And when we come back, we're going to find out, okay, so we learned from you what life was like from birth to 43 when you stopped. You said 43, 42?
Yeah, 43, yep.
Right, 43. But now we want to hear what the last 20 years are like, because you've done incredible things, and you can share what worked for you, you know, with our audience, especially for women. You know, I think right. Women, again, what we found in the show, and even young people, like, it's sometimes it's a little different, you know, like you said, there's a little shame in it, you know, there's more shame. So you drank secretly, but we're going to find out how you lived, these last 20 years. Obviously you're doing great. You wrote a book. I'm sure you've done a lot of other great things, and we're going to find out. You're listening to Stepping Out Radio. Go to our website, sign up for our free newsletter, and we also have a free new mobile app for your iPhone or your Android where you can hear all the stories, and they're broken out in categories. So it's just so easy if you're, you know, home before you go to sleep, you know, if you want some added encouragement, the stories are all on there. And again, I want to give out B.A. Austin's name of her book. It's called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. And it's very, to me, it's very uplifting, because and if you have relapsed, that's, you know, that's part of recovery too. But she went, her family confronted her, she got it, she didn't have anger, and something incredibly beautiful came out of it, which is her sobriety. And she's going to share with us up next about what her life was these last 20 years. You're listening to Stepping Out. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. We'll be back up next with B.A. Austin's, more of her story and what her life is like now.
More true stories of real people who clawed their way back from addiction are just a tap away with Stepping Out Radio's new mobile app, available for iOS and Android devices. Go to steppingoutradio.com on your phone or tablet now and click the banner icon. Find that favorite episode, share it through email, or post it on Facebook and Twitter. Steppingoutradio.com has one-touch subscriptions for iTunes, Google Play, and all other popular podcasting apps. Find it at steppingoutradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Stepping Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host, where every week we share two stories of people that have overcome all sorts of adversity in their lives. We have a woman on the line who's telling her incredible story and who wrote a book about it. Her name is B.A. Austin, Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. And she did recover from her alcoholism, or is continuing to recover, I should say. But I also wanted to ask you, B.A., you spoke in the beginning of your story about your binge eating issues and your, you know, how you always felt that you looked in the mirror and you had a bad self-image. Were you able to overcome that, or did you replace alcohol with, you said you stopped running and everything, but was that always a common thread through your life, that you still had this terrible self-image and you always felt, you know, like you weren't good enough in terms of your body image?
You know, I think, you know, all the binging and all the obsession of exercise did stop. And I at this point in life now, I have a regular regime as far as exercise. And it took me, you know, I think that I still probably, and I just accept it, I may not, my image of myself may be not what it should be, because people can compliment for certain things about me, and I'm so grateful that they do, but there's always something inside of me just thinks, I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. But I think what really changed, what really was the turning point for me to really feel so much better about myself and who I am, My father passed away in 2000, my mother in 1990, my dad in 2000. He was young, and, you know, 71.
Right.
And like my mother, he, you know, I would spend a lot of time with him during his last days. And it was really, because my father was not an affectionate man. It was just not in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And no fault of his own. He was a good man. And he shared so much with me that week, and he, one of the, and several of the things, and a lot of that, a big part of that was my self-image. He said, "Betty Ann, I just want you to know that I know that I was not ever there for you to tell you how smart you are or how pretty you are and just compliment you, and I want to apologize for that." And it was also the first, and saying that to me meant the world to me, to have that come from my father, because
right.
I never thought I was good enough in his eyes. And I thought he always was thinking my brothers did better or whatever. And he also told me, "I don't want you to think your brothers have anything over you, because they don't."
Mm-hmm.
You have everything they've got. And he just made me feel, for the first time in my life, like, wow, my dad loves me, because he had never said it, those words. And it was for the first time in his life he actually said those words.
Wow.
And I'm not the only one, and that happens to so many people. And it again, because when I look at my dad and the way his mom was, she didn't have an affectionate bone in her body.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much closure, so much healing in that week that I just started coming alive at that point. I started feeling so much better about me and the person I am. And I thought, wow, Dad really loves me, and he really does think the world of me. And so when he did pass away, we did have a real closure there. So I think knowing I had that helped me a lot,
right,
in my self-image. And then over the past, 16 and a half years now, as far as the alcohol goes and staying sober, there are certain guidelines I set for myself right from the start, and I've stuck with them for all these years. For example, and they may sound silly, but I do this. I'm an art historian, and I've done museum education, and I teach art history to university students, and especially in the museum world or any kind of nonprofit, there's a lot of parties.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. That's how they raise money, et cetera.
Sure.
And in the past, the first thing I would do, like so many people, you go to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get your glass of wine, get your glass of champagne, or whatever you want. I made a commitment for years. I just did not go to any parties that I thought, okay, that's a slippery slope for me. I'm not going. And if people said, "Why weren't you there?" blah blah blah, I wasn't embarrassed to tell them, "This is why I'm not coming." To this day, if I have people over to my house, I said, "If you want to have anything to drink, you bring your own and you take it with you."
Right.
So people know that's what they do. I don't keep alcohol in my home
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that, this is just the rules that I live by. Or even at the grocery store, I don't go down the liquor aisles.
Yeah, why should you?
Day,
right. Uh-huh.
I just don't. I just don't go down them.
Right.
It's easy to go down them to get to another, to go get your soap if you want. I just don't go down them. So these are little things that I've always done for 16 years. And I also think it helps because I try to give back and help those who are struggling. And I've gone over to the Betty Ford Center. They have alumni over to talk to the patients. Because
mm-hmm.
I remember so well being a patient, sitting in that auditorium, listening to an alumni say, "Oh, I've been sober for a year." At that time, I thought, "Oh my gosh, is there any way I can stay sober for a year? You just have no idea. You don't ever think you can."
Yeah, people say that, right?
And here it is, 16 years and almost 20 years later. I mean, and here I am. And I saw just how much help that gave the patients there, and how grateful they are to hear someone who's really struggled and has come out on the other side. And I think too, I just I never take it for granted, ever. Even going, I go to an Episcopal church and they have communion every Sunday and it's wine. I don't take it.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
no.
And it's just a sip. It's
right.
Just a sip.
But
and I could say, oh, okay, I'll take the sip, but I don't even do that.
No, most people don't. And what's your relationship like with your kids now and your...
Oh, my relationship, I'm so blessed. My relationship with my daughter and son is so good. And I don't see any, I can see in personalities now, if I feel like there's someone has the tendency toward addiction. And I don't see that in my children at all. And my daughter, who's 35, has three sons, and I'm just so close to my grandsons. I'm so grateful. They live near me. I get to see them all the time. And my son lives near me, and we just have a wonderful relationship. I'm truly blessed. I really am. I'm very grateful to my children, and I'm very, very grateful.
And did your kids go to any support groups or no?
They did not. Mm-hmm. No, they did come in the beginning when they would give you little chips or something for your birthday of how many years you've been sober or whatever at AA. They would come and celebrate that with me.
But when you were in recovery, like, did the center ever have? I know they.
Oh yes, yes, right. Yes. They did have family week,
right?
Where they came and those support or what they did at family week with the children was separate. I wasn't a part of that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That the patient's not really a part of that, and they came to that for a couple of days, which is really good for them as well, because they, especially as adults now, they know that addiction is so huge in our family. And like my daughter doesn't drink at all, and my son rarely.
Mm-hmm. Because of the history, or just it's not their thing?
One is the history. I think a lot of it's the history, because they don't. And with my daughter, luckily her husband, my son-in-law, he's not a drinker either, just because he just didn't grow up in a family that drank.
Right. He just sits on his, yeah.
It's just not on his radar. So they don't.
And even in their college years or high school years,
they never did.
Yeah, so that's like incredible too, because a lot of, unfortunately, people will say, like, I'm never going to be like my dad or my mom, and then they just do, you know?
Oh, yes, that's what I did. I went down the path of my dad and my mom.
And your family was interested, because a lot of the women seem like they were older. You were even older, you know.
Right.
So it just goes to show you that it's, it could happen at any age. You know, I think some people think.
At any age.
Right.
Exactly. And alcoholism, and I know your other guests have told you this, it knows no boundaries.
Right.
None whatsoever. And it can be any, and it can happen to anyone. And it just, even when I was at the Betty Ford Center, it just broke my heart to see these teenagers there. Just so at a loss. And when you're young going through that, and all your peers are able to go out and have fun and have a drink, and it's very tough, and it's very difficult for me to see and hear today just how rampant addiction still is.
But the good news is there's a lot of now, the good news and sad news is there's so many more young people, but at least then they have each other. And in college campuses across the country, they have collegiate recovery programs now and ways of support. So it's so sad, I agree. But at the same time, there is hope, just like you shared with us. Well, thank you for being with us.
There is a lot of hope.
Yes, there's hope. And you were listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. You just heard author B. Austin's story, incredible story. And she wrote a great book that I urge you to get called Smell the Raindrops, One Young Woman's Journey Through Life, Love, and Recovery. So, B.A., thank you and continue. Good luck.